The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve? Andy? Yeah! Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Wednesday, 7th day of December, 2011. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow is up about a point. S&P is down about 3. The comp is off by 8. Gold is up by $6. And Michael is typing. Good afternoon, Michael.
Oh, good afternoon. Good afternoon. Sorry to hear that.
Oh, that's all right. So, this is an hourly chart. By the way, garble check.
So far, so good. But,
check.
That could change at any time.
Nah, come on, man. Have faith.
Okay, all right. Did you guys show everything?
No, the guy didn't show, but I did the manual reset. And so, yeah. You know, here's what's interesting. Yesterday we went live, and we had the issue. Okay. But then, later in the program, as David and I were talking, to the best of my knowledge, at least no one in the audience mentioned it, there didn't seem to be any problem at all. So, you know, an intermittent connection typically is, I don't even think it. Go ahead, caller.
Yeah, so what are you saying? It's my fault?
Are you ready to start the show?
I am ready.
No, I'm saying it's driving me crazy. That's what I'm saying.
I know.
And I'll leave it at that.
Of course.
Hey, on this hourly chart up here, I just want to point this out, and then we'll let you do the recap. By the way, to those of you that are new, welcome. Glad to have you with us. We're moving into our seventh year of broadcast. We broadcast live 2 hours every trading day, Monday through Friday. The station, CFRN, broadcasts 24/7. Okay, so you can come here and get a lot of good content, get your spirit fed. There you go. You can get your head fed about markets for 2 hours a day, and then you can work on your inner man, the other 22, plus weekends. So give us a try. We are at CFRN.net on your internet radio dial. Now, on this hourly chart in front of us, I found this really interesting last night. We had the move up, which came off of the announcement that Europe was going to potentially double their firepower. That was the Reuters headline that Market Watch put out to the world, which I think originated with Financial Times out of London. But it was a very catchy, snappy headline, and the markets responded quite well. Ran right up to, what was that high? 1259. Yeah, 1259. All right, we reversed off of that because everyone realized, well, at this point, it's just a discussion. So we had this big up candle, and then the following hour, took it all back. And then, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and it turned into 9, I guess. 9 hourly candles inside this big red hourly candle right here. Now, people go, well, why is that important? Well, did I say? No. This right here, to me, is an indication of lower prices. But before they gave us lower prices, look what happened. This thing ran up, took out this high. It almost took out the high, put in way back. What day did we say that was on, Mike?
The high was November 14th. Somewhere around there?
Yeah, I need more data.
I'll tell you.
It'll come in a minute.
I have the data. The high was back 11. It was 1275, I believe. That's where it was, yeah. 1275. It was on 1113. Oh, no, sorry. Excuse me.
There we go. Now I got it. I just reloaded my charts. So this was it on right here, 1270? Yeah.
There was one at 1275 on 11.8. But anyway,
right,
it was way back
push
there.
Push back farther? Okay, there we go. 1275 on 11.8. And yep. Then last night, that was... we took out the high of the day, but we didn't take out those previous highs, swing highs at 70.75. And then we came down hard. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And because the news was out of Europe yesterday that rallied the markets, that they were going to double their bailout, have twice as much money to our future enslave their children with, that should have been bullish for the market, but it what happened, you know? I mean, if the U.S. does this, followed by, and then the Asian markets do this, based off of European news, you would think that when Europe opens, they would take that and run with it, but they didn't. They did exactly the opposite. Now, over here, this is a setup that I call the Twin Towers. You don't find it in the trading books because I made it up, but those two candles are almost identical, except for the fact that one is red and one is green. When you see that in just about any time frame, it's a really good idea that the market's headed the other way. Now, this one is not a carbon copy. You can see the tail sticks up a little higher on the one on the left than on the right. But depending on what time frame you trade in, you start watching for those. Now, they have to be. There has to be some context to it. This is a nice move down. That's some pretty good context. Okay. But this is also this hour was a powerful move down. Took us from 52 all the way down to 44. And then the following hour, we go from 44 right back to 52. So we'll watch this next hour. Typically, what we would see is higher prices after this. Now, if we had the same formation up here, we would expect lower prices. So I just wanted to point that out. Anytime something like this happens, it kind of jumps out at me because it's an anomaly to see 9 hours of trading inside of 1 hour. Okay, and you can go out and Google and study candlesticks and all of that, and you can interpret that to mean whatever it means to you. It may be significant, and it might not. There you go. Thanks, Robert. Okay, Michael, would you like me to turn this? Oh, let me just up front. Big news. Okay. Big news on the horizon. All right. Michael Z, I just got a text message from David. Okay. He was supposed to be here this week. I emailed everybody. I blogged it. Turns out he's not going to get here until next week. Okay. He'll be in the Las Vegas studios next week. And he will indeed be coming on the radio program. And I'll let David explain what happened and why he's not here this week. Because I really don't know. David knows. I'm assuming it was a business issue or a personal issue. Or I'm a really big and important guy and trading an awful lot of contracts. And I can't make it right now. So, no, I'm just kidding. He's a very nice guy, very genuine, down-to-earth kind of fellow. In fact, you would never know that he trades in that kind of size if it weren't for the fact that David decided to talk about it on the radio program and to get him to come on and talk about it. I don't think it's something he would have ever... I don't think if you met him at a cocktail party, I don't know that he drinks cocktails, but or in a coffee shop, that he would bring that up. He's not the kind of guy, doesn't strike me, that wears that on his sleeve. But anyway, I look forward to having him on the show. He's been on the show 3 times in the past. Last Friday night, I think it was, on the blog, I posted 2 of the previous interviews. It's a link. You can just go in and listen to them. And then, of course, we'll record the ones that we do next week and maybe put them in a separate section on the website because, quite frankly, it was a little difficult even for me to go back through the archives and find them. Because I had not labeled them with his name. But I found 2 of the 3. The third one, I just didn't want to dig back far enough for that one. But you can go back to Friday's blog post, listen to that if you would like, if you have an interest. Or just stay tuned because he will be here with us. And according to the text, it's a promise that he'll be here next week. Also, the other big news, and then Michael does the recap, the iPad 2 giveaway. Okay. The 5th day has come and gone. Remember the rules. The rules were that it was open. You could get in the drawing to win the iPad 2 up until the 30th of November. One of the rules was that you had to then spend, that once you entered the drawing, part of the requirements, okay, you didn't have to mail in a box top from your cereal. You simply needed to spend 5 days in the live trading room. Well, 5 days has now passed. So on Friday, live on the air, we're going to draw and reveal the winner of the iPad 2 on Friday's radio program. So ladies and gentlemen, if you entered that drawing, or if your name was put in because you referred to someone, then I encourage you to be here to collect your prize. Michael, take it away.
All right. Let me just grab the charts first. All right. I'll do that. Everyone can look at my charts. For those of you who are trading during the break, we did have a trade set up on the 4-tick range. It did go to the profit target. I will point that out in a minute. I believe it did anyway. I'll have to take a look at it. But here we go. You should be seeing everything. And
just a second here.
Hey, Michael, before you start the recording.
Yes.
Just mention to folks that if they go under the radio tower to where it says click here, they'll access the charts. I see some people on the site that I don't think, that may just, they may be listening to the audio only on purpose, but if someone wants to see the charts, if you drag it into the window, they won't be able to see it because they can't see it.
Yes. But what I can do is describe it to them. If you go to www.cfrn.net, in the right-hand column, there's a radio tower. Underneath the radio tower, well, first let me let them load the page, www.cfrn.net. once you've loaded the page, in the right-hand column, there's a radio tower. Underneath the radio tower, there's a button, and underneath that button, there's a little blue link that says click here. Click on that link where it says click here, and that will open up a new page that has a big microphone on it and a whole bunch of text. If you scroll down that page about halfway down, you'll see there's an arrow inside a green circle, and right underneath it, it says watch live. Click on that. That will bring you to the sign up page where you sign up to watch everything that we're doing in here right now, everything we're talking about. You can watch it live, and you only have to sign up once a week. All right, you will be sent a link, an email link, once a week, probably about an hour prior to the market and prior to the meeting. And you can just click on that link and get in here and watch it live. That is it. All right, that's all you have to do. All right. Now, hopefully everybody followed along with that. Maybe we should actually do a little recording of that and put it on the website. put it on the website. How to use the website. All right. That said, let's jump right into the morning. We didn't have, there's not a lot for me to go over here. We had two trades. I'll tell you right now quickly. We were break even on the morning. We had two trades that we actually took and filled on. Each one went at least plus 1 point. And we moved our stop to break even, and we got stopped out at break even on both of them. Neither one of them went the full 2 points. All right. There was a turning point in both trades. I'll show you that as it, as I do the recap. All right. So I'm going to start the recap here. You ready, Dwayne? I'm ready. We'll start the recap here in the, hang on. 3, 2, 1. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is December 7th. I believe it is Wednesday, December 7th, 2011. I am going to go over the trades we took in the morning session, the trades we didn't take, the trades that set up, why we took them, why we didn't take them, all that stuff. Let me start out with the results from the morning. I meant to restart or log off and log back onto my DT Pro. I hadn't done it since yesterday. I haven't logged off since yesterday, and so I got 24 ticks in yesterday's trading session for the ES. We didn't get any today. We got break even. All right. So let me start right out here. Right at 9:30 here, we started moving down. The market started moving down. We had this little space right in here. This didn't go 3 ticks outside the box, so there was no George trade. So the second pullback was not a George trade. So we needed the BBC to get outside the box. By the time it got outside the box, we weren't going to trade it into a weekly trading zone, so we needed to get through the zone. We finally did get through the zone down here, and we had a fresh bubble. So and we had a fresh bubble. So we took the short here. We shorted at 48, I believe. And we were looking for it to get down to 46. Yeah, we were looking for it to get down there to 46. We might have shorted at 48 quarter. I don't remember which one exactly, but we shorted there, and we're looking for it to get down 2 points. It got about 1.5 points, I think maybe even 1.75 points, and we moved our stop to break even. Once we moved our stop to break even, the price dropped down even farther. The price retraced. I just got a text. Sorry. Price retraced, and it took us out of break even. So we had no gain on this trade. All right. We could have taken 1 point profit in here. As a matter of fact, I attempted to, but I was too slow moving my stop up to the plus 1 point mark. So we got no trade here. I mean, no gain here. All right. The thing that was distracting me was I put this down here. This is the elbow. I'm just going to show it to people, and I'll do it in the recording here. This is the elbow. It's the same as the elbow that's up here. It just doesn't have anything on it. When I say outside the box, I mean below this dotted line or above this dotted line. Okay, that means outside the box. When price is in here or the BBC is in the box, and when either price or the BBC is in the box, this is the space that I'm talking about. Okay, the elbow, it shows when the market is likely to reverse and change directions. Okay, and you can see, like, right here, when it broke down, it moved down. That's what the elbow is for. All right, I just wanted to point that out. I had put it down here earlier today to illustrate what it was used for. But now you know. And now it's recorded for eternity. All right, so as we move forward here, we're bumping up against this weekly trading zone, so we weren't taking any trades at all on the long side in any time frame. All right, so we just watched this thing move along and move along. And down here, we were trying to get this trade right here. It almost filled us. It almost filled us. I even had an MIT order on. My MIT order was on here at 46.5 right here. It was on at 46.50. And price pulled up to 46.25. And it wasn't until this bar finished painting and this one triggered that it moved down below 46.50, where I would have moved my order down below 46.50. And by that time, it had already dropped a point, so I couldn't get into it. It did go the full 2 points from where the entry would have been, and then it pulled back up. Now, when it pulled back up over here, we were going short, not based on this, because we didn't meet the criteria here. We needed a fresh bubble over here. We needed to have a fresh bubble, right? Actually, I guess this was the first pullback, so we could have actually shorted right here because it didn't pull back far enough here. We could have shorted right here. But we were already short from over here on the 2100 tick. And I'll scroll back to that. Right, the BBC here, the BBC on the 10K, and the BBC here on the 4 tick range were all within a point at the time. So we shorted it here from the 2100 tick on the move down below the 50. The cycle was in favor of the trade. We had a bullish cross, a bearish piercing of the envelope down here. The red envelope got pierced by the green trend strength line, suggesting we're going to move 3 to 5 points down. We had already moved the 3. But we were looking for the 5. As it was, we entered again over here, which would have worked out to be in about right here on this chart. Again, that price moved about 6 ticks, or that trade moved about 6 ticks in our favor, and we moved our stop up to break even. It actually moved pretty quickly in our favor, and we moved our stop up to break even. Once again, it put in a higher bottom. Right here, you can see I drew a trend line up them. And it reversed again. Right there. That was 2 times this morning that it reversed like that on us. All right. And from then, we didn't have any more trades this morning on the ES. Okay. There was one right here during the break. This is the one that I was talking about. I mentioned the entry would have been 52 and three quarter, looking for it to get to 54 and three quarter. It cut up to 55. So that one would have gone the full 2 points just to the tick, though. So, there hasn't been a lot of follow through in the market yet this morning. Okay. Over here on the 2100, there were other opportunities right here, but I didn't take this because it was going into the zone. All right. We had a higher swing. If we didn't have the zones here, we would have been able to go long again right there. We would have been able to go long again right here. Not so much here because the cycle's pointed down right now. But there were a couple of opportunities in there on the 2100 tick if we didn't have the weekly trading zone right up above us. I don't trade into zones, but you can see the same thing was setting up here on 10K. Okay. that was the ES this morning. We had an opportunity to take 2 points, but it was 1 point at a time, unfortunately. The YM, on the other hand, we didn't take the trades on the YM because they were all bumping right into the zone. Well, most of the time. This one was bumping right into the zone, so we weren't going to go long when the ES was right below the zone. All right. We had the bullish cross, the pullback down to the BBC. Then we had a bearish cross with a pullback to the BBC. But with this huge momentum bar coming up here, I didn't want to go short right there. What time was that? That was at 10:31. I believe we were doing something over here on the ES at the time, too. Then we had a bullish cross, meaning the MA1 crossed up above the BBC, and it pulled back down to the BBC right there. Would have been a good place to enter if we weren't right up against the zone here on the ES, and we were. Once again, we're right up against the weekly trading zone on the ES, so I didn't want to take any long trades anywhere at that point. Okay. And that was pretty much our morning. That was it. There wasn't much to talk about, but hopefully if you go back and listen to this again and you weren't sure about any of the little nuances or any of the criteria to get you into a trade, I may have mentioned some in here that makes sense to you. All right. All that said, we ended the morning break even. Okay. There. That is the end of the recording. All right. Does anyone have any questions about anything? I know I ask this every day, and usually there's just a silent stare. It's like I remember one time when I was in college. I am not in a trade right now, Carl, but that's not to say that one did not set up. All right, you could have been in a trade from over here. Okay, you could have been in a trade. Well, not so much from right here, but because the cycle is not in favor of it on the 2100 tick. Nah, not really anything on the 2100 either. The only trade you could have been in would be this one right over here if you wanted to try to get more than 2 points out of it. It was from right over here. All right, now we have a fresh bubble, so you could look for another pullback here. And, Dwayne, this is getting up there to that area that I had been thinking we're going to get up to. I mentioned that at the start of the morning session. I was thinking we're going to get up to this 57-58 area, the zone up above this one that we're bumping against.
Yeah, I see that.
Oh, okay. Back to my little story. When I was in college, I was in a speech class, and I gave a speech about terrain following radar. when I was done, people just looked at me like I had six heads. Is there any questions? And of course, you know, what are they going to ask? Does it really travel at 11.7 gigahertz?
Carl, in answer to your question, no, we're not actually in this trade right now from 12:53.
No.
That trade triggered when Michael was talking.
Yeah, I already answered that.
Oh, you already did.
But
very good.
I did. Yeah. Yeah, we're not in it. The only opportunity to be in it would have been from over here. Okay. And that was during the break. I wasn't even looking at it. But right over here at 12:52 and 3/4. 12:52 and 3/4 would have been the entry on that. And you can see it's gone 5 points from that spot. Another possibility, and this is something that Mike R. might have done because this is a 2100 tick trade and it's one of the ones that he does, is from over here, same place, 52 and 3/4, but he likes to get 5 1/4 points out of it. So he's pretty... No, he actually just hit his... he's just right up against his profit target of 5 1/4 points. Those were opportunities to enter into this move up right here. Okay. Does anyone else have any questions? I'm happy to answer. Mike C., do you have any questions? I'll try to get back to you earlier tonight. Because I know last night you called when I was in a meeting and I couldn't call you back until later on in the night.
That bottoming or not bottoming, but that pattern that I pointed out on the chart, from the close of that candle at 52, the candle that we were working on when I showed it was
this one right here.
Oh, you got it?
I have it right here. The high of that candle.
It's about a 5-point run.
Yep, 53 up to 57.75. Yep. The low of the current candle on that chart is 52.25, and that's right about where you would have been entering, 52.5, 52.25, right near 52.75.
Could it go further?
So that is
on a trade like that. Now this was an hourly candle that I showed you on the at the beginning of the broadcast, and if you're going to base a trade off of an hourly candle, guess what? You're going to have to assign more risk to the trade than if you're trading off a smaller time frame. Now you could take that big picture setup, okay, where you had the what I call the twin tower setup there at the bottom. People can go, well, no, that's a tweezer. Okay, I don't want to argue over the names. I just want to say that you could go to a smaller time frame to get an entry. In fact, if you look at the 2100, probably gave you an entry.
It would have been at the half hour mark, so you would have been looking.
Yeah.
This one right here, at 11:45, you would have been looking to enter at 52.5.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have given you 5 points.
Yep.
From there. Yeah, when you're expecting, what you're expecting when you see one of these formations that Dwayne has coined the Twin Towers, and I like that, by the way, is it to move up, okay? Yeah, is for it to move up right here. And so what you would look for is drop down to a smaller time frame and look for opportunities to go long. All right, so dropping down from this hourly time frame to the 2100 tick time frame, right here at 11:45, you know, well, this bar, the new bar, started on the half hour mark. You know, 12 minutes later, there was an opportunity to go long here on 2100. If you look at the 10,000 contract, let's see, the first opportunity on the 10,000 contract wasn't until 12:10, so it was, you know, a little while later. Not too far off the same price, though. If you look at the 2100 tick, you know, from the 10,000, it was over here at 12:10, right in this range. But you could have gone long over here for the move up. Now, Frank just pointed out that there were two Mike R trades. There were two Mike R trades if you were looking for 2 points on a trade. You know, if he entered here and he was looking for 5 points, well, his 5 points just came into play right here. Okay.
And if you look at Michael's chart on the right, you'll see that the same trade, the same setup, everything on the YM. Okay, that's the Dow. Someone asked this morning in the live trading room, I think their question was, does the Dow lead the S&P or does the S&P lead the Dow? And the answer is that on any given day, any given hour, one can take off ahead of the other. But at the end of the day, if you've got a 5-minute chart or a 10-minute chart or an hourly chart, you can pretty much lay them on top of each other, and they've traced out the exact same pattern. So don't try to hit your wagon to, okay, when the YM starts a move, I'm going to go buy the Dow. I mean, I'm going to go buy the S&P. Because, I mean, there are times and moves and days when that will work beautifully for you, but it's not a consistent thing. But when you have the setup, like, let's say you're looking at that hourly chart, on the ES, and you saw that setup there, it goes, this says we should have higher prices. Then the YM might be the market that you're more comfortable with. You can go and put that trade in on the YM, because if the S&P is going higher, the YM is going higher too. If the ES is going higher, the YM is going higher. It may lag behind it, it might run ahead of it, but they're going to both make the move. If one makes the move, the other's going to make the move. If one can't move, the other one's going to sit range-bound as well. Now, the YM's has a little more fluidity, wider swings. I think YM could be on Dancing with the Stars, whereas the S&P, that's more like what they call, what do they call that? Crump? Crunk?
It's, I don't know.
It's that new hip-hop thing where they're like, they're all, you know, all down on the floor, and they're like I don't know. I think it's crunk.
You sound like you're actually getting on the floor.
I was. I was trying to get it. I thought if I got in the position, I would remember what it's called. But it's a style of hip-hop, and it's one of the ones they do on the So You Think You Can Dance. Little Seal, never forgive me because that I forgot this. Crump, that's what it's called, Crump, C-R-U-M-P, which is just the opposite of all the elegant stuff they do over there on that show where What's-Your-Name falls down. That was the last season. All right, if you're a partner, partners meeting tomorrow night, 9 o'clock. If you're not a partner and you're in the free trial, you should have gotten an email last night from Michael. If you didn't get the email, then email Michael, support, or just email him straight away, tech, T-E-C-H, at cfrn.net, or pop into the live chat, give me your email address, give Michael your email address, he'll send that email over to you. Once we get your paperwork handled, then you'll be in the partners meeting tomorrow night with us. If you've not taken the free trial, we encourage you to do that. Go to cfrn.net/apply, take the free trial. On Friday, we will be drawing the winner of the iPad 2. Okay, so you want to be here for that. So that covers Thursday, that covers Friday, and then by next Monday, we'll find out from David in just a minute, but by next Monday, we should have Michael X on with us, and hopefully he's going to be able to, you know, spend a few minutes with us each and every day that he's in Vegas next week. So I am looking forward to that. Michael, anything else you want to add before we go to Vegas?
Nope. You've covered it. The partners meeting tomorrow night. You have to become a partner. I think if you were been in here on a free trial for the last week or so, and your trial's about to expire, your trial is really about to expire. You're going to lose indicators and everything. Get in touch with us. If you didn't get an email from me already, then really get in touch with me if you're interested. It's tech@cfrn.net. Because I can send the stuff out to you and we can get it taken care of. We get you into the partners meeting tomorrow night, get you all set up to be trading tomorrow morning. Before the European Open tomorrow, if you want. Again, my email address is tech, that's T-E-C-H, at cfrn.net. And that's it.
All right, folks, we're going to pause for station identification and we'll be right back.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
David, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. And good morning, Michael.
Good morning, David.
Good morning. Well, how are you, Dwayne?
Good. Were you just in a car accident?
No, but I could be in one if that's necessary to be on your program.
I thought I heard, like, tire squealing.
No, that sound is the sound of a glass partition being closed so that sounds from the other side of the office don't get in here while we're on with you.
You actually have a sound booth. That's why you sound so good. You have a sound booth.
Yes.
That's why you sound so good.
It could be.
I hope Santa brings us all a Heil PR-40 for Christmas with the big arm that comes down.
I know that's the one that you want.
Oh, God.
The microphone won't do you any good if your internet isn't working,
though.
So maybe what you need for Christmas is a Santa Claus upgrade to your internet.
You know, my guy, I called my guy. My guy's coming, and if my guy can't do, if he can't make it happen this time, then I'm just going to break down and get the T1. I don't have any other choice. I just, you know, just going to have to do it.
Let me make a, you know, I do a lot of market forecasting. I don't know if you've seen that.
Oh, stop.
The forecast that I'm going to make right now is that you are going to end up with a T1, and there's ain't no two gosh darn ways about it.
You know, Dave, it's been beautiful. There's been no problems. Now, you know.
But this is how it works. This is what happens.
Okay.
I've been through this many times. So, for whatever reason, someone else, a larger company, comes on, and they're sucking up a lot of your cable. Because you're on that loop, they're sucking up a lot of that bandwidth when they weren't there before, or a new neighborhood begins, they open up to a new neighborhood, whatever it is, a whole bunch of bandwidth starts to get used up. In our particular case, we had Channel 13 show up down the road, and they, you know, they were the final nail in the coffin for us. That thing is a party line. Everyone is using it, and you don't have a independent connection to the NOC, to the central office, and that's what you want. So you'll get there because these little things, sometimes it'll work beautifully, and then sometimes it'll just be all hacked up. And we not only did we have to do that, which, of course, you know, we wanted to initially, but they told us that we wouldn't need to, but we also had to pay for having, 250 yards of concrete dug under because our office is in a location where all this had to run under concrete out to the street where they could take it to the NOC, and this is fiber. But the moment we did that, our connection became extremely stable, and it's problem-free. Hmm. So it's really a good thing. And T1s are very inexpensive now. They're not as inexpensive as a cable connection, but, you know, you do get what you pay for. So that's my forecast.
So you're saying the radio show shouldn't be free?
No, the radio show should be free.
Oh, okay.
You should pay, though, for some
well, you're telling people
good
they get what they pay for, so I don't know. I follow you. You know, and I've watched the price.
When you had your last business, T1s were $1,000. They're now down to about $300.
In my last business, they were more than $1,000. Much more.
Yeah, they used to be really expensive.
I mean, I had my first T1 in 1998 or 99, and the guy in the building, they were internet providers, and they did the very thing that you did, David. They came in with a backhoe in the back of this building we were in downtown Phoenix, and they dug up the concrete, they laid the fiber, they ran it up the back of the building. Now, this is back when everyone was still doing dial-up internet. These guys did dial-up internet. They did phone cards. They had a deal to provide wireless internet to India, which I thought was the most ridiculous thing in the world. You know, here's all these starving people, and you got a contract. Okay, what's that ever going to be worth? Well, silly me. and they spent a huge amount of money to bring that. Because this was a fiber pipe coming up to them that would bring internet to them, but then it would go from them to people all over, you know, the valley. You follow what I'm saying?
Sure.
So there, what you laid in for your own personal use, I don't know, maybe is a quarter inch garden hose, just to use some kind of an example.
It actually looks like a pool. I'm looking at it right along the wall here. It's actually more like something you would see that runs on your pool sweep, that round.
Okay.
So, for whatever reason.
Yeah, and
that's
so what they brought
actually,
in
that's
was
the thing that protects the fiber, because the fiber's inside that, and this is a very solid piece of flexible hose that runs from our servers out to the wall and then down into the concrete.
So, I watched all this construction go. It was a very exciting day. You know, it was laid, and then it went live. And, man, upstairs, I'd go hang out with my buddy Don, and they had all these huge servers and all of this stuff. But they couldn't scale quickly enough, and then pretty soon the cable companies are giving you internet, and everything moved so quickly that they got behind the curve. And I'll never forget the day the fiber went dark. It was a sad day, man. Everybody on the third floor of the building was walking around with their head down, their shoulders slumped, because they were on the cusp of this new internet age that was breaking out. And they were, you know, and there was a lot of people, a lot of companies like that, that they got left behind. You know, it truly became a best of breed kind of thing. Yep. And, man, they had the right people. Don was just a genius. He's probably the smartest guy I've ever known. He's since passed away. You know, that's just the circle of life. But, anyway, I do remember that fiber. And, you know, I think a T1 will... this was digital fiber optic that they had laid in, mm-hmm. which that's what you had laid in, right? So, mm-hmm. anyway, I'm gonna talk to my guy, who, you know, he works for the cable company, but you know, maybe he could come to work for me part time. You know, because I don't know, we'll see.
Maybe he should from like 12 to 2.
Well, I just want him to, you know, be on call. And then I'll pay him.
Because we don't have any problem during the morning session. Have you ever noticed that?
Because I'm on a telephone.
Oh, yeah. You always tell me that.
I know.
You're always reminding me of that.
Did you put a post-it note on your...
as I said this morning, I don't have post-its.
The bottom line is that cable is just inconsistent. If you're trying to run a business off of it, it's an inconsistent product. It is everywhere. It's here in Las Vegas. It's where you are. It's just inconsistent. There's nothing they can do about it. It's just the nature of it. Somebody else comes in and wants to do something, or somebody does something weird and sends out a virus, chews up a lot of bandwidth. You know, that interferes for a while. It just gets, you know, you need a stable, really stable connection. And I think you're going to be in T1 land sooner than you think.
Did you guys see my speed test results? I did a speed test.
And what was your speed, Michael?
Download speed 40.94
MB.
Upload 30.11 MB.
Wow, a 30 megabyte upload. That's pretty fast. That's really fast.
Yeah, pretty fast.
Well,
is that a cable?
Fiber optic.
It's cable. Fiber. Are you running fiber from your house? Or is that...
Yes.
Oh, okay. Because I was going to say, that's a fast connection.
It is. It's pretty good. It's compared to the cable one, you know, I used to have both cable and this one, and mm-hmm. it's more than double the cable one on any given day.
Yeah. No, that's great.
See, if I run a speedtest.net, I get good results as well. Not quite that good, but I get good results. The thing is it's not just about the speed. It's about the consistency
yeah.
of the signal.
That's the whole thing. Your speed actually can be much slower than Michael's, and you can have a perfectly adequate connection. I mean, a 10 by 10, 10 up, 10 down, is beautiful. 10 meg is a very adequate connection. But you want it to stay 10 by 10. You don't want it 1 minute to be, you know, 300K by 5. megs or something, you know, because that's what happens on cable. It's constantly going up and back. So, anyway, so you'll be there, Dwayne.
Okay.
Very You're good. Moments away from
I'll,
it.
I'll start shopping now.
Because they're not going to be able to fix your problem.
Well, no.
Your problem
See, the guy
doesn't
came
get
put
fixed.
Me in a new cable modem, and the day after he came and put me in the new cable modem, your exact words were, Dwayne, you have never sounded so good.
I know, but you know what? That's just the way it works. They show up and stuff works for a day or so, and then you still have inconsistencies. So, you know, we'll see. You can continue to use it until you don't. But I think it's professional, and I think the listeners demand and deserve a T1 connection, so they know when you're talking
okay.
that they're going to hear you loud and clear.
Download was, I just did mine, download was 27, upload was 13.49.
Yeah, that's a little slow, to be honest with you. That whole thing you've got going there is it's a little bit slow for nowadays, but, you know, it's usable.
2713? That's huge. 27 megabits per second?
Oh, 27 megabits per second. I thought you were talking... I'm sorry. I thought it was
upload
27.
Upload 13? That's huge.
That's the upload.
The upload 13 is very good.
Yeah.
That's
so
very good.
It's
that's
what
faster
it is.
Than our connection.
It's
that's
packet
faster
loss.
Than ours.
That's the problem I'm having, is the signal
well, that's the consistency issue. That's what we're talking about. You don't need anywhere near that speed. You just need a consistent connection. So...
He told me when he was here, he said, one of the problems with in your junction box is it was turned up too high. You were, data was actually being pushed to you faster than you could receive it. That's why you were losing the packets. Oh, I don't want to talk about this. It just makes me, let's talk about markets.
Oh,
well,
let's talk about
Michael Z, because I sent out an email over the weekend and I blogged that he was going to be here and that, you know, we're going to really enjoy this. And I understand that things happen, but give us the
well,
lowdown.
And this has happened before. You know, he gets things go on and he changes his schedule, and that is what happened.
12:57.
Uh-oh.
Speaking of Michael.
That right there was Mike Reed.
That's Mike Reed.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Michael. Mike. How are you?
Oops. I'm good. How are you guys?
Good.
Great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Oh, that is good.
So sitting here listening. And
well, you showed up. Now you're on stage.
Oh, no. Yes. Continue. I'm learning some stuff here.
Okay. Dwayne, just one last thing on the T1. A T1 is actually a pretty slow connection anymore.
Wow.
Your cable connection is much faster than a T1 connection, dramatically. But if it's consistent, it'll still do it. There's faster connections than that, and you know, you should ask your people about fiber and see what they can do for you on that as well. Because fiber, you can just crank the speed up at any level. You're not fixed at a rate. You know, at a T1 is a fixed thing. Fiber, you can just turn it up faster and faster, depending on how much you're willing to pay, I guess, for the speed.
Yeah.
So
that's what we have, fiber optics here.
Oh, that's good. So Dwayne, I guess, is the only one that doesn't have. He's the only one that's using, you know, the cheap stuff. Yeah, that's fine. We understand.
Oh, my goodness.
You probably have a swamp cooler, too, right, Dwayne?
Yeah,
something like
that.
Come on now.
So
you
guys
throw
actually
a swamp cooler on any old house.
That's true. Anyway, swamp coolers are pretty good. So Michael, give us an update, or Mike, give us an update on you and what's happening and what are you seeing in the markets?
Yeah. Is it good? We got well, let's see. Today we had, let me go to my charts. One second here. We had the we had the down opening. One second. Where's this here? Okay, we had the down opening, and then the first bounce came up to a resistance sell point, just under 1250, and then the drop to 1244 was right in major zone from we got 1244 to 1242 area as a major area. And from there we had trend up move so far that we were able to catch a couple lows on.
Good.
And now ran up to a big resistance at 1258.50, which this is a key for the day on the top side. So far we have a little double top there. And 1257 would be the a break and hold under 1257. Could start putting the pressure on. So it started to break the pattern. But it has been, we had a low 1 hour into the day, which is not unusual at all, and then trend up from there so far. But we're still in a range here on the bigger picture. We have a little double top at 1266. And a really nice down move yesterday that we were able to catch, and especially on a second entry at 1263 yesterday.
Nice.
Off the high. And then from there, it was a steady grind lower into the close. So we've had some nice trades set up for us, and just kind of going with the flow. It's back and forth here in a wide range, and we're looking for two-sided trading action for the most part. That's
interesting. Well, let's see. I don't know if I can add anything to that or not. A lot of those numbers are, in this particular case, are similar to what we're looking at as well. For us, the 1243 level is critical. You said 44 to 42. They need a daily close below 43 in order to indicate a larger fast drop, which would occur from a break of that level. You can go below it intraday, but they would need a daily close below there. And if later in the day, if by chance they were below that level, I might tend to be a seller for an overnight position based on that break. And I don't right now I'm not taking many overnight positions, but if they did look to close or actually close below 43, I would want to be short for a fast move down, especially considering the unusual nature of what the market's done over the last several days with this advance, the very, very large week up, and then the very, very, the cab drivers know the market's overbought here, and yet the market is still up. And so that, I don't know if that appears unusual to you or not, Mike, but it did to us. And so a break of 43 would be the first real indication for something normal to happen on the downside, a bigger move.
That would be a big reversal here in that close. Because that's our low for the day. That would not be, if we were to reverse from up here, that would be a big reversal day. So I kind of doubt it happens, but you never know. But in any case, 1252.5 was been kind of pivotal several occasions this week, and that's what I have for a key spot on the outside. So if they got below that, then I think they'd change. They would definitely change this trend that started just after early afternoon, 12:15 Eastern time. But, that would put a real big dent in this. What's gone since then? See what else. Not a whole lot also. Most of the indicators. We've been up, so for yesterday's inside day. This would be 7 out of 8 days. I think, and we had an 8 day down move into the low. So I don't know, 8 days down, 8 days up. Overbought, et cetera, but Still back and forth in a range. If I think, if we get to higher levels, if they happen to break out here, I'm having a hard time doing it at the moment. But
well, they're having a hard time going down as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So if they're not just having a hard time breaking out, under normal conditions, considering what the market's done, we would have a multi-day decline off of this advance. That would be under normal conditions. However, now that the market has moved beyond the cycle, for the most part, that would create that. Again, 43 is important, and yesterday we mentioned to our institutional people that you can't short this market for longer term until we get a daily close below 43. And as of yesterday, we hadn't even touched 43. We got down to 45, but finally today we did 44, which is close enough. It's within a point of the 43 level. Daily close below that puts the market way back into a normal position, and then we can talk about the lower prices and forecasts. But for the time being, this market's moved through enough time now that it's been through really two complete cycles in our work, and has stayed in this range. That means, generally speaking, that when the market does make the move out of this range, up or down, that it'll be a fast and it may be tradable. You know, it depends on how skilled you are in either being in already, which is not probably a good idea to try to guess in this particular case, but once the market moves, if you can be in, it's probably going to be a pretty fast move. And it may well be that the market's waiting on Friday's news, because so many things are tied to Europe right now. If you're thinking about news and the markets, not everybody thinks that way. But, you know, I myself, I'm not a big news person at all, but we do have big news coming out, a number of different pieces of big news, especially regarding the euro and some other things. The euro and the S&P have been very closely tied together, and a number of other markets that did turn on their normal turn date of December 1st, plus or minus a day, gold, the euro, a couple of these major stocks that we follow, and had forecasted that turn, the S&P did not. And so the S&P is in a completely different position. And as I mentioned a number of times just in the recent months, that the bottom that we made in October, which we'd forecast a September bottom, but it came 1 month late at slightly lower prices, although this isn't an outright forecast, it's quite possible that that low won't be seen for years, because the market is in a bullish position longer term still. And, you know, remember, I haven't seen any good news in the last, you know, year, and the good news still isn't coming out. The only good news we have, if you want to call it good news, is less bad news. And in with that backdrop, the market has been advancing all the way from, you know, March of 2009 to where we are today. And these pullbacks, as large as they are and as record-breaking as they are in many cases, have done nothing to damage the larger uptrend. That's how big the uptrend is. So we are longer term, and I've mentioned this on the program, we're longer term bullish and looking for higher prices into next year and somewhat beyond. So I don't know if that fits, Mike. I don't know where you are on all that, but that's just a general outlook for the longer term. In spite of the down moves and the back and forth, the general trend is no doubt still up right now, longer term.
Yeah, I think so. Or a big sideways pattern, with all the ups and downs. And
yeah.
So
a lot of the Elliott wave outlooks are, you know, oh, guess what they are? What do you hear from Elliott Wave people all the time? The market's going to crash.
I thought we were going to go to 410 on the Dow.
Right. That's what you hear from Elliott Wave people. And how long have you been hearing that from Elliott Wave people?
Oh,
since about 1990.
Yeah.
So, and then when the big advance and on and on and on. I don't know what it is with the obsession with crashes, but I think to be able to call a crash puts you way up high if you do it. But if you make a career out of calling crashes, it's going to be difficult to maintain your career, you know, in doing that well, because crashes occur under very unique sets of conditions, and there's a number of them. You can't know all of it, and, you know, it's a difficult, that's a difficult game to play.
But I did call the bubble in 2000 before that hurt.
You said talking about Elliott Wave, or
no, just in our own work, we had time frame for presidential cycle was running out, but a number of things, the way the indicators looked, the way the rally, we had I think 13 years in a row, which is a record, where the daily chart, or I'm sorry, the yearly chart, had a higher high and a higher low. If I remember those numbers right. Which I don't think, if I remember not correctly, also that was the only time that had happened. I'm not sure how far back they went, but you know, never 13 years in a row where the yearly chart is a higher low.
Yeah, that's a very unusual thing, no doubt.
Yeah, and right into the Y2K issue, which was really kind of humorous, I thought.
Yeah.
The whole situation. And the dot-com bubble at the same time really all came together. And then they really, you know, went, they lost 50% from the high. So that was a big move. And then 1987 was a little different story, but it was pretty close on that one. But anyways, that's the old day. Sometimes, you know, you can just see the big ones happening, and you might be a little bit early on that, but when there's something like big going on, I guess, at least in my case, I've been fortunate enough to have that gut feeling or whatnot, but, or more from observance or what, I don't know, process and stuff, but, in any case, they work out, which was nice to see. Mm-hmm. It's not something that comes along very often, and someone makes a living like Elliot Wave does with another crash forecast or that type of deal. You can't believe it then, you know.
Well, if you hear it too many times, obviously, and I don't want to denigrate the methodology, because I think part of the methodology is being denigrated by the people, potentially anyway, who are using it and using it to make continued crash predictions. Because I've been hearing that from my entire time in the markets, from 1994 forward. I've been hearing that at 1994 forward. I've been hearing that over and over and over again. And in the meantime, the markets have rallied, you know, amazingly since that point, and we're back to that point now. Now, listen, at some point, the market is going to take it all back. At some point, it is going to go down, and it's going to be big, fast, and ugly, like some of the cars that I used to own. But they are going to do that, in most cases, in a way that surprises the majority of people. It's not going to be something that most people know about, very much like how the Y2K thing, as an example, everybody knew about it, the world's going to come to an end, very much like the Mayan time cycle, which is December 23rd, 2012. The odds don't favor that a big cataclysmic event is going to occur on that day. History doesn't work that way, really, and that when people in mass can expect something, it usually doesn't work out that that's going to be the catastrophe that ends the world or causes huge, you know, turmoil or whatever. Those types of events, huge turmoil, big market crashes, all that stuff, most of those come by surprise. And yes, there are some people are out there, there might be a few people that can, I know there was one person for sure that called the housing crash and the subsequent, you know, huge decline in the market, and he profited from it. He had a two-tiered thing. He actually called for it, and he then went and profited from it, which is a very remarkable thing, because calling the market and trading the market to profit are two completely different skill sets. But for the most part, most of these big world historical events happen as a surprise to people. They're not something that, you know, is in a newsletter that everyone has in their hand and, you know, can schedule their life by. And of course, I, probably like you, Mike, and probably like everyone else on the program and people who listen, have friends who had spent lots of money on having underground shelters and things built for Y2K and God knows what. You know, I know people who've done all of that stuff. At some point, something really big is going to happen, and then there's going to be somebody that stands up and says, I called that. At some point, market moves can be called because there's a graph in front of you, and there are relationships, and there's important, there's a nature to it, and you can work with that. There's something there to work with. When it comes to just regular events, just being able to say that this huge cataclysmic event's going to happen, unless you have some either supernatural or some other technical way of knowing that, the odds are that most of the people who make those calls are going to be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the facts. Those are the facts, because there's been so many people that have done that over the years, including people who call for the end of the earth, whether they're religious-based or otherwise. They've all been wrong. And that we've had we've had over 100 of those just in this century alone, in this last century, you know. So we're 12 years now into the new one, but those kinds of things take, you know, they take everybody by surprise when they really do happen, most of these big, big things.
Somewhere along that winding path you were just on, you mentioned cars.
Uh-huh.
Guess which car they're bringing back. You might already know this.
I don't know. Tell me.
The Dodge Dart.
Oh.
They are.
This is really the age of the muscle car and the, you know, with the Camaro and the and everything coming back, and the Dodge Dart. God.
There was a model of the Dodge Dart. The transmission was push button. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Instead of having a gear shift on the column or on the floor, on the dashboard, there was a little button with a D and an N and an R, and you push that button to engage the transmission.
Yeah, that transmission changed gears the old-fashioned way when enough fluid leaked from one part of the system onto the ground that a shift was almost guaranteed by that point.
Yeah, I had one of those, and it did have transmission problems.
Yeah. Anyway, so... Mike, do you have anything else you'd like to talk about on markets? I mean, name it. Tell me. Or anything else you're watching?
Oh, we just had our breakdown here. I was just trying to... 1 second. I want to do something with my members.
Yeah, 1 second. Go, please.
But, okay. When we took out that 57.50, there was a break point, and I can hold off on this. We have 1255.50 for 1255.50 to 1255 zone for micro support here, and a spot to take take some profit on this. But they waffled around resistance there and didn't. 58.5 area was. Was our resistance area, and we only got one tick above that. We've got our pullback here just to see if they come down to the target. And that's, let's see here, 1 second. I think they had to hold in this, that 55 level basically to avoid maybe some more damage down to 52.5, and that could like we said earlier, you mentioned earlier that 43 was key. That obviously would be, you know, if we reverse from up here at 1250, say 1259, round it off and drop that many points, which the range is lately not large comparatively to what we had, so that's a big move then.
Yeah, that's a very nice move.
So, you know, a move up and a move down, and that would be not look good on the daily chart or any really time frame that I'm looking at.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
I just think first things first, we have to push down through 1255.50 to 1255 area, and then 1252.5 is what I have for a key spot today.
Okay. Well, there you go. They're turning up here, and this is 58 is in our support and resistance panel for selling territory this morning. We're attempting to be short up here as well for a move down. These numbers are similar, but for a move down to 54. Anybody who's short can hold for 54 into the following hour on the downside here. But either way, we're still well inside the range that we've been for a number of days. And my suggestion to people would be to not try to be on this in the mode of trying to be on the train before it leaves the station for the bigger move. I think it'd be wiser to wait for the market to show its hand and then get on. Even though that may take a little bit more skill, it definitely won't cost as much money to do that as it will to be on the wrong side of this market when it breaks out. So that's something. And this has been a tricky position here. Tricky market. This last whole run up, unusual stuff has happened, and you want to be extra careful because the odds aren't in your favor if it's something unusual. And if you don't, I'm assuming if other people have not fully understood or realize where the market is or understand its position, you just have to be careful. And stay careful until they show you something you understand. So anyway, if you want, Dwayne, let's switch over real quick to we have a couple other markets that are important that we do want to look at today. And then I'll be out of here a little earlier as well, because that's necessary for me today.
Okay.
But I'll stay with you as long as I can. The first market I wanted to talk about today was the euro, and we've talked about this for a number of weeks now. This is important because we're getting to the point where we're running out of time, and you know, we do have big important news coming out, I think, about the euro. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, this week on Friday. And that news is, you know, the euro is potentially close to being out of business. So we're making a call. We've made a call for the last 2 weeks now for the euro to have bottomed on the week of November 21st and then to have an advance, a multi-week advance, into the week of December 12th up to 136.70. And because there is so much news and other factors that could affect this, and many, you know, those of you who've watched for many years know that the news normally is the reason why these forecasts get completed, not something that interferes with them. But the fact is that we want to be extra careful with this, especially for the listeners. So I've suggested to people that they don't take any positions until 135.20 is closed above. And if they close above that on the daily chart, that certainly limits your profit, but it will definitely increase the likelihood that the move is on, and then you can still have well over 100 pips, you know, close to 150 pips in that on the upside up to the 136.70, which is due on the week of December 12th. So if a person wants to, and we have told our institutional people this several days ago, that they could continue to buy at or near the 133.50 to 60 level, and that's a high risk thing. They've supported there. That's fine. They've held it, and I'm glad to see that. But I think for the listeners here, it'd be wiser to hold on and wait for the real easy trade, which would be a daily close above 135.20, to get this up there. Today it's up nicely, a little bit anyway, and we'll see how they finish up of the day on the euro. And Dwayne, you'll let me know if there's any questions on the euro or any of that.
You know, there's a comment from Mark that you talked about that Friday the news would come out, but Mark said, allegedly, however, there may be a time zone factor, and it could literally be Thursday in the wee hours. So,
oh, that's a good point.
Mark,
that's a great
when
point.
I understand the time zone difference. Since we thought we were going to get the news Friday, do you mean the wee hours of Friday morning, like 3 a.m. here in the U.S. when the European markets open? Or are you actually referring to the wee hours of Thursday night or early Thursday morning? If you can, because I know you have a good knowledge of all this stuff, so if you can nail down some times for us to be watching for that. Yes, about 6 or 7 hours difference, and they are later. Yeah, I know that. But are you saying that it would be the wee hours of our Friday morning or the wee hours of our, in the U.S., Thursday morning? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Okay.
Now, another individual, David, I'm going to share this.
No, take your time.
I wasn't going to share it, but you know what? Just share it. And I'm assuming that it was sent to me to share, so it's going to be bold and share it. Hang on. Now, I don't know, and I'm going to ask James to maybe share with us how this is calculated. And Mike Reed, you might be qualified to tell us how this is calculated. Commercial hedgers, green line below, have a pretty good track record per the euro over the past 3 years. At all the number ones, large traders took bullish positions on the euro, and look what followed. So see, here's a one and a rally, a one and a rally. At two, large traders took bearish positions, and look what followed. Two, a decline, two, a decline. At three, which is where we are now, hedgers are now taking very large bullish positions on the euro. Okay. Now, this is based upon... David, you can answer this. Mike Reed, whoever is on here, how do they determine? I understand the commitment of traders report and all of those kind of things. How does a person determine, how does a layman determine who's accumulating what and where?
I really don't know, Dwayne, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I missed the first part. This is not a commitment of traders report.
This is a hedger's report.
Okay.
It says here that large traders took bullish positions on the euro right here at number one. My question is, how do we know that? How do we know that large traders? Yeah, how do we know there were large traders accumulating there as opposed to a bunch of small traders?
I don't know the answer to that either, but I do want to say that typically, this is really interesting to look at, but typically...
I'll send you a copy of it.
when you see these reports where they show commitment of traders and professionals taking positions and this sort of thing, it's not as clean cut as this. Normally, this is like pinpointing tops and bottoms. And I don't know if they drew the arrow in there, because look at where they drew the arrow here. The arrow is exactly at the top
or the bottom in each case. That's an after-the-fact drawing.
Well, but that's fine, but they're giving us an after-the-fact report. And my remembrance of how this works in real life is that it's not anywhere near as cut and dry as that. That in many cases you will see a market declining and then declining, and on the decline you see professionals, you know, starting to accumulate positions, etc. And then it may go sideways for a long time, and then finally this rally comes or something like that. Sometimes it's better than others, but to see it drawn out in the way that they've got it here, I think is unrealistic, to be honest.
Go back to point three. It looks kind of fishy, at least. What was that?
Well, now somebody was just trying to share a chart that they have with us. So.
No. Yeah. I'm not. Nobody's beating anybody up. I'm just saying that the pinpointedness of where bullish traders and bearish traders took positions on charts like this that I've seen over the past 20 years. Once in a great while, it pinpoints a top or bottom, but it doesn't pinpoint it like this is really nailing each and every one. And normally, those types of actions by bullish and bearish traders don't accumulate and distribute positions exactly at the top. It's much more spread out. Now, maybe they just put the arrows on here, whoever made the report, just to highlight the point. But in most cases, it's sloppier than that. But it is interesting, isn't it? I mean, he's basically indicating in this report that we're sitting at a point right now where there is accumulation going on. So I don't know how they know that. And maybe the person who sent the report could help us know that. Maybe he knows.
James, if you want to share that.
Must be a way that they place their orders.
One opinion offered was the number of option calls being bought on the 6C.
Okay.
I mean, that's, you know, somebody threw that in the ring, so I don't know how valid that is or not. Bert, are you there? No, Bert. Now, okay. Mark says, it is by definition three groups, commercial, small speculators, and large speculators. That is defined by either professional status, e.g. guys in the pits, and the other two by the size, number of contracts. Sure, those errors were added after the fact. That is how they look when the commitment of traders charts print. That's not how they look when the commitment of traders charts print.
That's what I would suspect. But the chart is still interesting, and it still is. It may be of some use. for people who may be following the roadmap or interested in following the roadmap anyway. And I appreciate them showing us that, because I have not looked at one of those charts in a decade. I mean, it's been that long since I've looked at one of those.
But yeah, that makes sense, because they you have to report professional status. They look at their trades, which were professional, which were like small speculators, mm-hmm. and so they could separate them out, I think, just by doing a run on how many trades were made by professionals, how many trades were made by each class, because they're tagged or whatever. So they could probably, could run, figure out who was making which trades.
Mm-hmm. So let's see. Well, that is interesting. We'll watch and see. And we're going to talk about that trade and that setup every day as we get into next week. Today is already Wednesday, and next week is the week of December 12th. So we'll see how that finalizes over the next week here. So that should be interesting. And
I have to step aside. So.
Okay, Mike.
Okay. Well, thanks for stepping in.
Yeah, appreciate it. And I sent you an email, too, in response to
nice
your email.
Nice to hear from you.
So when you have a chance to read that, let's chat by phone or email me or whatever you want to do. Okay?
Okay, Dwayne.
All right,
Let's do that.
All right.
Okay, I'll talk to you for a good way to do that.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Mike, right, talk to you soon.
Take care, guys. Bye.
Okay, see you later. All right, well, Dwayne, let's see if there's anything else that we can cover today with you. The only other thing is gold yesterday closed real well, as did silver. They tested at an important level and closed well. I'm talking now, of course, about February gold. Today, they're up nicely. And we mentioned on the program yesterday or the day before that if gold was unable to touch 1699 on the downside, then the date of the 8th or 9th is going to be the next important turn for this market and on the upside. And so this will wait for that here, and we'll be able to take a trade off of that as well. Silver is also in a strong position or stronger position right now from yesterday's daily close as well. Now, we're not trading it independently right now. We just have a longer-term position, so we're not trading day trading this or whatever. But the fact is that this market has some really powerful moves and very directional tradable moves with some good Globex night action as well. The S&P has been much more tricky on the overnight than, if I may say so, than, as an example, gold has been. Another date for gold that you might want to keep an eye on is December 14th. Of course, we're getting close to Christmas around that time, but that's another point for a very important, the beginning of a very important directional move with a volatility cycle and some other factors coming in at that time. So you see, I really enjoy the thing about finding the dates in the future and knowing that if I don't have a trade today, I have these dates lined up or hours, whatever they are, looking into the future for actionable events to take place on. So I'm not worried too much about, actually getting everything perfect, this today. And if I miss something, that doesn't mean I have to worry too much, because there's always something else coming up that you can practice this and get it down. And practice does make perfect, but you're not going to get perfect in this. What you get is better at managing the imperfectness. That's what you get better at. And a person who can manage that imperfectness can make some serious money in the markets. And I usually don't like to talk about money, but it's a fact. There is money to be made by learning how to manage the imperfectness of all of this, whether it's the methodology or the market movement itself or any of that. Managing it becomes the critical thing. You can become a really good manager of this. You can do very well. I would almost rather say I'm a manager of imperfect behavior than call myself a trader, because I'm not crazy about that term for a number of reasons, but not because it sounds like a traitor to the United States or something like that, but trading just doesn't, you're just trading money back and forth, and that's what most people do, is they end up basically just trading. They're giving their money to somebody for a while, and then they take some of those guys' money back and forth, And most people don't end up much ahead if they end up ahead at all. I really like to think of this as investment, short-term, medium-term, long-term investment in the market. And some of the best trades that I've taken are trades that are the ones that I had to wait for all the things to set up. And, you know, sometimes even you have to re-enter the position. We've talked about that. And sometimes you miss it. That's just the nature of it. But it's the high probability that makes this thing work. That's the deal. If you have the high probability setups, and for your own trading, if you're going to trade in some size, wait for the high probability setups, learn what they are, and then wait for them and practice trading them. So anyway, we just closed the hour here. Normally, this advance that we just had from today's low would attempt, we had messaged in our messenger window, that it would attempt 1260. And we haven't quite gotten there yet. We've gotten up to 1258.75, which happens to be a level listed in our panel. But the advance would normally want to test, or, you know, if you can think of it in those terms, that the market would like to go up to 1260. So if they can't reach 1260, that will be an early indication for some weakness in the market at this point. And we would want to take advantage of that on the downside, like I talked about earlier. If we do get up to 1260 at or near that level or a little higher, that will also be important for us to potentially take a position on. So we'll wait and see how the market plays that out. A few days ago, a good example of the strength and weakness by natural numbers was shown in the gold market. And I'll give you an example of that. The other day, the gold market had, let me find the chart here. Give me just a moment here. Well, where is that little chart? Well, I don't have it right in front of me, but I'm going to try one more time here, and I'll just point this out. I just want to show this, because the markets will run to their natural levels that are due at a certain period of time. But if they can't, obviously it means that there's some other force at work already. And here it is. I guess this is what it is. no, that isn't it. I'm sorry. That isn't it. If I can't find it today, I'll have to find it. Oh, here it is. Okay. it was on November 25th. The market attempted to touch 1270 or 1673. Gold did. And this is now in the February gold market. 1673 to 1672 was the natural position, and they were unable to touch it. They went down to 1675, and you think, well, okay, 2 points off, it's not too bad. But the fact that they couldn't touch it on a important cycle date like that, where that price would normally be tested, meant that there was a already existing bullish force under the market. And if you look at February gold, starting from November 25th forward, you can see they had a very nice advance up from there and reached important levels on the upside. That's the kind of behavior that happens when the market is unable to touch a natural level. In most cases, it will touch the natural level. It's not a big deal. It will touch it. But in some cases, it can't, and that's a signal way earlier than most people would know that the market is, in fact, very bullish at that point. So that's a good example in February gold, isn't it, where they came within a couple points and then couldn't touch it, closed decently on the day, and the next day they just started up. And before you know it, the market's really moving higher. And so that type of thing I'm looking for in various markets. It's tricky in real time because you can't say definitively at that moment, well, they couldn't touch it, because there may be 3 hours left in the day, or, you know, there's a number of things that can happen to make it difficult to know for certain that they're done even trying to touch it. But the fact is, at some point you can say they were unable to touch it, and then you have something to do right there. You can take your next long position. If the market breaks out or gives you some other type of indication, you know what, you want to be in that. You want to take advantage of that and buy with both hands, so to speak, because you have an early indication of strength, then you have it followed by a subsequent breakout, and then you trade to targets. So that's a really, really nice indication. I was thinking about coming out with a chart, Duane. I don't know if we can do this, but kind of a like a support and resistance panel, except it would be natural levels for certain periods of time during the day. And a person who subscribed to Messenger Pro could get that chart, and they could make their own decision based upon whether they want to trade into that number or if that number couldn't quite be reached, what that would mean if subsequent to that the market would have a big breakout or some signal to them that would indicate further advance or decline after having not been able to quite touch a natural level. You follow?
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's good.
That could be a really interesting, useful thing for people. Because we give out the numbers on the program here quite often, but there's actually a whole bunch of them throughout the day, during the day for time periods, and most of them will get hit right exactly as they're supposed to, or the market will actually exceed them. But when they can't get reached, I mean, first of all, they can be useful just to trade to those numbers, and then secondarily, they can be useful if and when, it's pretty rare, it's probably 20% of the time, less than that even, that they can't reach their number. And then that can be a very powerful signal for the market to go the other way. So that's something I was thinking about.
I think that would be very good.
Yeah, something to think about. Other than that, Duane, I think that's about it for today. The S&P is continuing to trade up here quietly, and I do have to run a little bit early today. It's not because I don't like you. It's not because you have cheap internet and are trying to pull off a radio program with, you know, an old cable system or something. I love all that about you.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to move you into the modern digital age. So you join us in the digital age over here.
Yeah. You know what? I looked at, as you were talking, you and Mike were talking, I looked at some of the speeds on some of the T1 services, and indeed they may be more stable. Which, you know, we talked about that being a necessary part of the equation is the stability of the signal. But the speed, as you mentioned, not really impressive.
No, a T1 is a 1.5 meg, you know, symmetrical deal. That's pretty slow by today's standards. You can do much better than that, and it's not much more expensive, et cetera. But that will work. 1.5 by 1.5 will work for what you're doing. There's no question about it. And it will be very stable. You'll never have another problem with it. So keep that in mind. I can order, and your listeners, the listeners can order cable with 40, in some cases, 40 by 40 or 50 by 50, or 50 by 5, you know, 50 megs down, 5 megs up. There's all kinds of services like that out there. We went to all this trouble to have a 10 by 10, 10 meg up, 10 meg down. That's plenty fast, but we want the stability. We don't want to have that fluctuate at all. So that's the big thing.
Well, they guarantee, when it comes to the packet loss, which is where the problem lies, they guarantee no more than 3% packet loss. And that is satisfactory for 99.9% of applications. Mm-hmm. But when you get down to 96, which is where the last test I ran, I had a 4% packet loss. That's enough to disrupt voice communication. So, that's the deal.
Yeah.
All right, I know you got to run. Let you go.
Okay, Duane, thank you very much. You guys, I'll talk to everybody tomorrow, and we'll go from there.
All right, buddy.
Thanks again.
Take care. Hey guys, that's going to wrap it up here. I'm going to get that old cable guy. Yeah, cable guy. Oh, that's a different. He was watching cable. You guys know cable guy? Yeah, all right. As you can see, we had a nice move here and a failure so far. But man, with this thing in Europe, and S&P threatened to downgrade them, and they're trying to double their budget, and the S&P says this is not a good idea. Standard & Poor's says, you know what, that's not a good idea. So where this market ends up, we'll find out. We'll watch it live together in real time. Again, if you have not taken the free trial, go to cfrn.net/apply. If you're already on the free trial, you're ready to become a partner, send an email to support@cfrn.net. We'll get you the necessary paperwork, and you will be in the partners meeting tomorrow night. Friday, we're doing the drawing, give away the iPad 2. Make sure you show up for that. And we had it confirmed today, Michael Z, or Michael X as I called him in a previous interview, will be with us next week. So we look forward to that. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this, there is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.